Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
And welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? Tonight I'm talking with Keith Linder, and Keith is the guy who is the focus of the whole Demons in Seattle, Seattle Demon House case that I had Jenny Ashford and Steve Mira on back in, I believe it was October 29th, talking about the book The Fire of House and Whispers. This is D. Keith from that book, the owner of the house, and he initially this was going to be a live interview. Instead, we decided to do it pre-recorded because I realized it was probably going to be two parts, and it is. This is a two-part interview. If you're a Patreon, you will get the second part right away. Everyone else will get the second part next week. This is interesting in so many ways. His experiences are very unique. It's almost a too-good-to-be-true type of scenario, yet many paranormal groups, including Steve Mera's, have been in there and verified and documented these weird occurrences. So, without any further ado, here we go. All right, I'm speaking tonight with Keith Linder, and how are you doing tonight, Keith?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me today.
And you have some notoriety in the paranormal world because you lived in a house that's been nicknamed the Seattle Demon House.
It's been two names, actually, or three. Seattle Demon House, Demons in Seattle, as it was coined on the Ghost Adventures show a year and a half ago. But the case is officially called the Washington State Poltergeist case. I think that's the...
Okay, and we had Steve Mera and Jenny Ashford on talking about their book that they wrote on this. But now we have you, so you can give us your personal take on everything that happened to you. So, one of my questions is, were you interested in anything paranormal before all this happened?
No, I had pretty much made it through my life up until now, giving the paranormal a second thought, really. I mean, the only time paranormal or things scary in nature entered my mind was around Halloween, you know, give or take, but nothing near close to the experience me and my girlfriend had while living in the new house.
Okay. When did you move into this place?
We moved in May 1st of 2012. Me and my girlfriend did. Yeah.
Okay. And, why did you pick this house?
I had found this house probably 2 months prior on Craigslist. I had just recently got a job promotion. So me and my girlfriend had been together for 2 years living in separate places. So it felt like it was time for us to, step it up a little bit and live under one roof. And I found this house 2 months prior to moving in, emailed the landlord. He responded and told me that the house was not yet ready. Somebody was still living in it, but he would definitely give me a call back once, which he did, and he called me back, and then we did the normal, you know, visit the house and whatnot, and the rest is history. I moved in.
Huh. Okay. And activity started on the first day, right?
Yeah. What's interesting about this is when we went to sign the papers on May 1st, me and my girlfriend, the landlord was there, obviously, and he left maybe after an hour or so. And me and my girlfriend were in the house sitting in the living room on the floor. The house is vacant. It's empty. It's void of electricity, void of everything. And we're just kind of sitting on the floor, getting a lay of the land, trying to, you know, see where we're going to put furniture and whatnot. And we both hear a kid cough coming from one of the upstairs bedrooms. And the weird thing about this kid cough, it was very distinct in the way we heard it, because when we heard it at the same time, and we looked at each other and said at the same time, was that a kid cough? And we were kind of puzzled, but we didn't go investigate. I mean, we were so excited about the house, but it was odd. We were the only ones in the home. I think we shrugged it off at that time as maybe outside. you know, noise from outside, but it sounded, you know, when houses are virtually empty and this is a big house, things kind of echo and bounce off walls. So it didn't feel at the time it was coming from outside, but that's all we had to go by. So we just shrugged it off.
Well, that seems like a reasonable assumption, really.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But the activity spiked pretty quickly, right?
I moved in first by a few weeks, and upon bringing my stuff in, and you know, you're moving stuff, you're moving boxes, the movers are dropping my stuff off. Probably a few weeks after I moved in and getting settled, I started noticing things missing. And by things missing, I meant my car keys, other things that I have called personal effects. Things were missing, and I kind of thought it was weird in the sense that I've never lost anything in my life. I'm not one of those guys that loses things, but it was weird. And then when Tina moved in a few weeks after me, we both started noticing silverware. Our silverware in our kitchen seemed to be depleting, but we didn't know or could explain why we're running short on knives and forks and whatnot. And we begin asking each other questions of, hey, are you disposing of knives and forks when you have dinner, or, you know, when you put your plate in the dishwasher or whatever? And of course, we said no. And then a few weeks after that, I would wake up in the morning, come downstairs to get coffee before I head out the door. And we would see, or I would see, all the cabinet doors in the kitchen open. And by open, I mean every cabinet door, top, bottom, left, right, open. And by open, I mean wide open. And this happened for a couple of days in a row. Obviously, I would ask Tina, were you downstairs last night or this morning? But it just didn't seem weird, because who leaves every cabinet door open, even if they just come down to get one thing out of a cabinet and maybe leave a door open? But once again, shrugged it off, even though I filed it in the cabinet of being weird. I'm still, you know, getting acclimated into the house. So is Tina. We still got things to unpack. And then a few days, probably about 2 months into the house, we're watching TV in the den area. I think we're watching Netflix. And Tina has a plant that she has by the entertainment center right next to the TV. It's about 4 feet tall. I think it's an ivy. And we're watching TV when all of a sudden this plant levitates or darts up into the air. Maybe, I don't know, 4 inches off the ground, and does a 360 spin very fast and kills over, just falls over. And this is not something we're seeing out the corner of our eye, because the plant is right next to the TV. We're already watching TV. The plant rises up, kills over. And I look at Tina, she look at me, and that's when we knew then that we might have a spirit on our hands, even though we didn't know what kind of spirit. We thought it was a kid spirit, because when this happened, we reverted back to hearing the kid cough. And the objects missing of silverware, my favorite coffee cup, it just seemed very innocent at the time. I mean, at the very least, okay, we have a kid spirit. It likes to take things. What do we do? And we just sort of marinated on looking online as to what do you do. And I guess the ball was pretty much in its court on what it would do next.
Okay. So it definitely had a trickster sort of element going on.
At the earliest, it seemed like it was, I mean, trying to get our attention, letting us know that, hey, we're not the only ones there. I remember the day I lost my coffee cup, because I had a housewarming party, and my friend who doesn't drink wine drinks coffee. So I said, well, you're a guest in my house. I'm going to give you my favorite coffee cup, the one my mom gave me. And she left it on the counter. And then the next day, that cup was missing. That cup has never resurfaced. The silverware, like I said, started depleting. And then we had the plant rise up. And then my car keys were still missing, and they're still missing to this day.
And that's the really weird thing, because in a lot of these cases, it seems like the stuff reappears, but your stuff just is gone.
Yeah, the majority, 99% of the stuff they would take of mine and Tina's, we never got back. The flip side of that is also during this same time frame, items are appearing in the home that neither Tina or I own. So while we're having a instance of missing objects, we're also coming downstairs and seeing kid trinkets. And that's why we kind of held on to the kid theory for a while, because we're seeing kid earrings, jewelry, and these are items wide open. They're not somewhere that you would think, oh, these are from the previous tenant. No, these are on the staircase, the counter, the kitchen table. And it was just weird because we were like, we don't own these. This is not ours. We don't have kids. So we can immediately deduce that this is not something that we brought into the house with us. And yeah, a lot of the stuff that we had got taken has never returned.
And at this point, there was nothing really malicious. It was more playful and tricksterish. Did you ever look into like the people who lived there before to see if anything happened with them?
Well, at this phase, I was starting to, I emailed my landlord and I asked him, especially once the loud banging started, which happened soon after the item started disappearing and reappearing, was the loud banging. So I just kind of emailed. I didn't want to, expose myself or tip my hand with my question, because I didn't want him to think that I was weird or having buyer's remorse. But I kind of asked him, hey, do you still stay in contact with the previous tenants? Because I have their mail. Some of their mail still comes here. I would like to forward it to him. And he was like, very nonchalant, said, well, just send me the mail. I will send it to them. I'm not able to divulge their current location and whatnot, but if you want to send it to me, I'll be happy to forward it to him, which I did. But then I asked him also, because he hasn't lived in the house. The house is 10 years old. It was built in 2005. He moved out early 2007, so he never really was in the house, maybe about a year, year and a half. So I was trying to see if he had ever experienced anything weird. But once again, I'm trying to do it in a way not to tip my hand. But I did ask him, hey, did you, maybe that's why you don't live here and maybe why you put it up for rent, but is anything weird going on with the attic? Because we hear noises coming out the attic at night. And his reply was, well, maybe there's some raccoons or opossums up there. And if you want to have it inspected, let me know. I'll pay for it, or I'll take it off your next month's rent. So yeah, we had that back and forth several times during my stay at the house. And it took 2 years before I finally was able to catch up with the previous tenants. And that came in 2014. And how I did find the previous tenants is I took the first and last name off the envelope of one of their letters that came in the mail, and I looked them up on Facebook. And lo and behold, with Facebook's current technology of searching, I found them. They moved to Yakima, Washington, which is 4 hours from me. And I emailed her, but in emailing somebody, emailing a total stranger, you know, how do you enter a conversation and say, hey, my house is haunted?
Yeah.
How do you, interject it? And she may come back with, think I'm weird or whatever, and leave me alone, you're harassing me, or how did you find my information? So I had to be very careful, and I didn't want her running to the landlord saying that I've contacted her. But I said, hello, my name is Keith Lunder. I live in Bothell, Washington. I think I'm currently residing in the house that you once lived in, and I'm only emailing you because we're the current tenants of the home, and I would like to know why you were living here. Did you experience any weirdness? Now, this was sort of a eureka moment or a revelation moment, in the sense of her reaction when she got my email was yes, 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 and yes.
Huh.
And she was very put off in the sense of, but she said, well, she said yes 4 times, and she said, but I'm not ready to talk about that yet. And I was like, okay, that's fine. When you are ready to talk about it, feel free to email me back. And she said, well, let me gather my thoughts and I will get back in touch with you. It took her about 2 to 3 months to get back in touch with me. I didn't want to email her constantly and say, hey, have you gathered your thoughts yet? Because her reaction alone sort of match the phenomena that we were currently experiencing because we're now 2 years into the home. But she did reply 2 months later, and she said, hey, me and my husband wrestled with this. Sorry it took so long for me to contact you, but I just want to let you know, for us, living in that house was a living hell. It was a living hell for us from day one. They only stayed in the house 5 months. And I never told her the phenomena that we were experiencing because I didn't want her to feed off of me. But she said that they experienced loud banging. They experienced being locked out of the home. Sometimes even with the child in the home, she would be locked out. Sometimes she would go out to the patio or whatever and get locked out. They also experienced waking up to discover the cabinet doors wide open. She had a nanny, a live-in nanny, who also experienced the phenomena and quit that day when the nanny experienced phenomena. So she was very detailed about their level of experience, even though the short period of time of 5 months, where we were now 2 years plus into the home. And then that's when I opened up and told her at the time what we were experiencing. And she was like, yeah, the house was a living hell. Her husband and herself had just got back together. They separated, almost divorced while living in a home. And one of her children, her child, got sick, developed meningitis while living in the home. So that was very, you know, for me and Tina, you know, we see things, we know what we see is real. But one of the things we're often asked by paranormal investigators, family, friends, and it's a logical question to ask, is did anybody before you experiencing anything? Because it adds to credibility. I mean, she's a stranger to me.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, plus it suggests it's not coming from you necessarily.
Right. Did we track this home? Did it follow us in? And like I said, we didn't have phenomena in our previous places, but like I said, you never know. Maybe something followed you home elsewhere. But once again, the questionnaires that I filled out when I had paranormal teams come in asked that very question. Hey, have you ever played with a Ouija board? Hey, have you ever went to a seance? Have you ever went to a palm reading or anything that may have tracked something to attach itself to you and lo and behold, followed you home? So I checked those categories, no, 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 and no, and no. But finally, with the revelation of a previous tenant, that made us think, okay, it's the house, and more specifically, it must be the land or the area around the house.
Now, have any of your neighbors experienced anything at the time?
Steve and Dawn talked to the neighbors on both sides, and I had talked to them many times before. They've not experienced anything phenomena-wise in their own homes. They will say that the animals, they have pets. The neighbor to my right says that his dog does not go to the left side of the house. That would be the side closest to ours. Our neighborhood is very tranquil. People walk their animals and pets and whatnot. A few neighbors have come forth after seeing ghost vans and ghost trucks in the front yard, have come up and said to me that their animals will not, you know, poop or whatever in my lawn or whatever, which is, I guess, kind of good. But
yeah, no kidding.
But the animals won't do that themselves. But nobody's outright said that they've had weirdness in their own homes. And I've asked, I mean, I don't go knocking on doors asking, but when people come talk to me, especially once it became known in our neighborhood that, you know, our house is sort of haunted, but nobody's had anything weird to their knowledge. It's one of those weird things. If it's land, why this house? I mean, it's over 150, 200 houses in my immediate neighborhood. At least five on either side have never said of anything weird.
Yeah, and that makes it even stranger to me. I mean, you figure most poltergeist cases seem to be focused around a person, and usually a younger person. And you would think if it's location related, it would not be so isolated just to a house unless there's just something with the house.
Yeah, I mean, in the house by appearance alone, I mean, it's a tract home neighborhood. All the houses, every other house looks identical to each other. But it's interesting in the sense of, and Steve and Don talked about this while here and found a lot of evidence that sort of put this case in the category of It's got elements of poltergeist. It's got elements of intelligent haunting. It's got elements of residual. It's got elements of demonic. It's weird in the sense of you go down one rabbit hole, and then all of a sudden, lo and behold, evidence pops up that makes you have to go, you know, almost abandon that theory and go to another rabbit hole, because it's different areas that they've uncovered and other teams uncovered that sort of makes this case unique and weird.
Okay. Did you hear a beep just then?
Yeah, that was my laptop. That was, I'm putting it on mute now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, were you, are you a religious person? Were you when you moved into this house?
I was raised, I'm originally from Texas. I was raised Southern Baptist, probably sung in the choir up until I was age 11. But, you know, I lean more towards spiritual than, I guess, organized religion. Of course, I have a firm belief in God and whatnot and try to follow the, you know, the golden rule. But I wasn't overly religious, even though I will say that kind of helped me get through this whole ordeal. But, no, I never wore my religion on my sleeve. It was just, you know, just being basic. But
Okay. So what was the next set of phenomena that started occurring?
Well, it seemed once the plant levitated, it seemed that everybody was of the understanding that, okay, we're not alone. And the spirit's like, okay, we got them believing in us now. And that's when the loud banging started. I mean, the first loud banging, I think me and Tina were in different parts of the house. I was upstairs or she was downstairs. And you hear this thunderous bang, but you can't tell or where the source is. It's just a series of three loud thuds. And it sounds like it's coming from either behind the wall or behind the ceiling. So Tina and I met in the hallway, and we're both like, what was that? After that, it seemed like every day was on a synchronized clock, because every night the bangs would come around in and around the same time, give or take 30 minutes. Keep in mind the cabinet door stuff would still happen. Items appearing and disappearing would still happen. So it would just be a new phenomena every other week, in addition to the phenomena that are already happening. The banging is what probably made us be like, okay, we don't think it's a kid, because this is, I mean, it's banging, we can't sleep. So we looked online, looked up information on how to deal with a spirit. And, you know, the thing we kept running up against was, you know, try to talk to it, try to walk it into the light, try to tell it to stop, try to be assertive and, you know, kind of don't put your foot down, but try to let them know, hey, this is your house, can we all just get along? They seem to respond negative to that, because the more we would say those type of things, the loud the banging got. Then that's when the objects started being thrown. I mean, you're walking downstairs, you're sort of looking at the ceiling trying to talk to, you don't even know what you're talking to, you're just talking, saying, hey, can you leave the house? Can you please be peaceful tonight? And all of a sudden, a plant gets thrown, not at you directly, but definitely in your vicinity. So with the plant shattering in 1,000 pieces, we stop talking. And then that's when we start saying, okay, we want to get the house blessed. And we contacted the local churches in the area, and two responded. And they came to bless the house. And we thought that would make the spirits be quiet for a while. It did for a few weeks, but then the banging would return. And then when the banging returns, here comes the door slams. And by door slams, I mean your sleep is dead of night. Most people sleep with their doors open. We do. And the door would slam shut and wake both of us. You wake up, dart into the hallway. Thank God nobody is there. And this went on. So now we got door slams in the middle of the night. The door slams became so frequent, we had to prop a pillow between the doors just to keep them from slamming. And after that, it was just pretty much a loop, if you will, of all the phenomena kept happening. And we're still in the summer of 2012. And then the early fall of 2012 is when I finally first saw what I call the Gray Lady, who was, well, I think, is referred to as an apparition, because I was in my office and Tina was taking a bath and I was watching TV or on my computer. And we had a lot of light phenomena of lights going off and on in the house. That whole week I had having lights be turned off in my room, or I would leave my room to go get coffee or tea or whatever and come back, my light is off. But this time I was in my room and my back was faced to the TV and the light clicked off. Now, we all have those light switches when, you know, you click the light off, it makes that little click. And I heard the click. So when I heard the click, I looked in the direction of my light switch, and there in the doorway was this woman. Now, the interesting thing about this woman, number one, is she's not Tina, my girlfriend.
Right.
But I don't know that yet. I'm seeing a woman there, but my eyes and my brains have not yet finished talking to each other. They're still trying to make heads or tails. But this lady that I saw was 100% gray. She was gray. She was the color of a egg carton, those 24 two dozen egg cartons, that gray matte color. Mm-hmm. And she was matte textured. But she was standing in my doorway, and when I saw her, she was standing sideways. And she was trying to dart, or it looks like try to negotiate herself to go through the door of the washroom, which is right outside my office. But she couldn't negotiate it, and then she darted off around the corner in the hallway. I just get up instinctively because the light switch goes off. I'm in the dark. The hallway light is on. I see what appears to be a woman dart around the corner. I give chase. I walk out of my room and walk into the hallway and turn the corner. And, of course, this person that I saw in my doorway, they're gone. But I'm walking so fast, I see my bedroom door, and I walk right into my bedroom door because I'm thinking, hey, Tina, was that you that turned off the light? Are you playing a joke on me? And when I walked into the bedroom, I didn't see Tina shoulder deep in bubble bath. So I knew it wasn't her. And then Tina looks at me because she sees a look on my face. I have this wide look on my face. You know, it's almost cliche in the sense of you look like you just saw a ghost, because that's the look I had on my face when I walked into Tina's room. And that's what I said to her, because my brain had now caught up to my eyes or vice versa and deduced that that wasn't Tina, because Tina's taking a bath. And I said, Tina, I just saw it. And she's like, what? I'm like, I just saw it. It turned off the light in my office. The only reason why I'm standing in front of you now is because I thought it was you. And I just was trying to catch up to you when you were walking to say, hey, nice prank or whatever. And she said, no, I've been here the whole time. I'm like, yeah, I could see that. So that made us put down the theory of it's not a child. And the lady that I saw, she had, she was, I can't really say her age, but I just pin it between 45 and 60. But her face, I remember her expression on her face was, she looked very tired, very worn out, but she looked very mischievous. The whole light thing was something like she was doing. It looked like she was surprised that I saw her. She was very surprised in the sense that he saw me. I need to get away, but I can't go into this washroom door. And then by the time I got to the hallway, she was gone.
Huh. And was that the only time you saw her?
For that year, for 2012, I would see her again in 2014, late 2014. This is after even when Ghost Adventures had left. I saw her in the hallway again. This time, it's a little bit different. Tina was in the driveway vacuuming out her car, and my window was open, so I'm hearing Tina vacuuming. And as I'm in my office, I hear somebody walking through the hall. And it sounds like they have, like rustling paper. I don't know if you get a lot of newspapers and crumble them together. That's the sound that I kept hearing, and it would not stop. So I was like, somebody in the hallway. And I looked toward the doorway because the sound was getting louder as it was coming past my office. There's another bedroom past my office. You have to pass my office to get to this other bedroom. So I'm waiting for this sound to catch up and turn the corner because it sounded like it's headed my way. And I'm looking, and lo and behold, there she is again. She has something in her hand. It sounds like rustling paper noise, but I don't know if it was paper. She has something in her hand, and she's all white this time. And this time she doesn't make eye contact with me. I don't make eye contact with her. She just goes parallel into the opposite room next to me, and I get up again, this time a little bit more hesitant than before. And then when I walk into that room, she's gone again. That would be the second time I saw her. The third time is when I'm sitting at the kitchen table, and she comes down the stairway and peeks around the wall and is looking dead at me. I'm on my computer. I work from home, and that night I was working from home, and I felt like a feeling of all eyes on me. And there was a lot of pacing upstairs. So I looked, and I'm circling the room with my eyes, and then finally my eyes locks onto the stairway, and there she is peeked around the corner. As soon as I see her peeked around the corner, she darts back. That time I didn't give chase. I was not in the mood to give chase that time.
Now, did you see any other apparitions other than her?
Yeah, the other apparitions, it's funny you should ask that question, because the apparitions that I saw besides her, I think Steve got on one of his motion cams, as part of the evidence when they were here back in April. I had always described to people what I see as, or I call them little shadow. I don't know how old school you are with movies or horror movies, but you ever remember that movie Gremlins or Critters?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Especially Critters, those little spiky whatever porky things. Well, those things in shadow form only, that's how tall they are, roaming and running around the hallway. And they cling to the outer rim of the house, especially the shadows. And they almost only circle the rim or the frame of the house. But you see them in the shadows. And once again, they primarily hang around the hallway, which, in fact, is the most active part of that house. Our hallway was always the most active area of the house. Second to that was the office, and then the kitchen or master bedroom. But they're that tall. They're about, I don't know, maybe a foot or less tall. I've seen up to about five of them. And I'm talking about shadow. I could discern. But what's interesting is at this stage, I'm starting to draw what I see for record keeping. So when I see them, I whip out a piece of paper out of my printer tray and I draw it immediately. I draw it down immediately and I draw all this stuff, scan it, upload it, and save it. Lo and behold, Steve Mara comes 2 years later after the fact and places a motion cam in the hallway of April of this year. And when he places this motion cam, it takes snapshots of whatever it picks up. And it must have picked up about 30 images. And we don't know what this is. I mean, the hallway is vacant. Everybody is downstairs. I think Dawn was even in the woods at that time. And the motion cams are going off constantly. An hour or so later, when we review the footage, what he's caught on his motion camera software is almost identical to what I've been drawing of what I've seen. And it's so profound because when I saw that on his computer, I was like, hey, let me show you something. And I showed him, this is what I've been seeing in that hallway, the same hallway you just brought this motion cam down from. And I've been seeing these things. And he was just, his mind was just blown away. Everybody's mind was just blown away. It was just that unreal.
Huh. Okay. Let me ask you this. Was there anything, I mean, aside from moving into the new place, was there anything in your house that was, or in your life that was like in disarray or severely changing at the time?
Well, changing for the good. I mean, the reason why we moved into this house in the first place was I had just got promoted to manager. I'm an IT project manager. And at that time, I was being promoted to manager, to where I was a supervisor and had 14 people reporting under me. But I view that as a positive, but right. nothing in the sense of, you know, turmoil or vexing or whatnot. None of that. And I tried and thought real hard because we're trying to find out, you know, the aspect or the common denominator as to, you know, what this stuff is and why, because it's very interesting. The first house I ever got for myself, and this is the first house I've ever got for myself and my girlfriend, turned out to be haunted. Okay. I'm 47 years old, moved into the house when I was 44. And this just seems, you know, I don't know. It just seemed funny or laughable in the sense of your first house, this happens to be haunted beyond extremes. And it took a while for me and to reconcile the fact that saying we have a haunted house is sort of putting it lightly. Because I mean, we've had three Bibles catch fire, crosses burning, a 400-pound armoire get tossed from one room to the other like it was a matchbox, things levitating, the poster catching fire. We think I was pushed downstairs, which tore my right patella tendon. I was laid up for 2.5 months during my recovery of after having knee surgery to reattach my kneecap. It is interesting, though, because as much activity as we've had, the activity did die down for the entire 2013 year. By the time we was gaining traction on trying to get help to come into the house in late 2012, the activity just abruptly stopped, you know? And that was probably the same time we was probably getting ready to tell the landlord, hey, we're kind of get out of here. But it abruptly stopped, and all of 2013 was quiet. To a degree of, okay, we think we've dodged a bullet. Maybe they left or grew tired. But I will tell you one thing. I fell and tore my knee January 2nd of 2014. The activity came back with a vengeance in March of 2014. When I was bedridden for those 2 months, I was restricted to upstairs because I was in a knee brace and had surgery. No way was I going down those stairs again while Tina wasn't away. But when I was at home all day, I started to hear those noises that I heard in 2012. And the activity came back one Sunday morning in March of 2014. And I think my injury and me being home majority of the time gave rise somehow. I don't know. I just feel that somehow that gave rise to the activity returning, because the only thing I'm doing is being laid up, and Tina's being my caregiver, but I can't move. I'm on crutches. And then one day in March, the credenza or the armoire is what gets tossed in the hallway while we're sleeping. And once that got done, the phenomena or the activity came back, and, you know, they don't return or go back to the, oh, let's open up some cabinet doors. Oh, let's do some thuds or whatever. No, they resume where they left off, and that's 2014. Will forever. I mean, that's the activity spiked to such a degree that all the dangerous phenomena that we had and witnessed took place in 2014.
Okay. Now, when did the Bible thing start happening?
The first Bible, the first Bible, interesting, and I guess this is one item that they took and gave back. The first Bible went missing late summer of 2012. As we were trying to, troubleshoot or do proactive steps, one of the recommended things from friends and family was, put a Bible out somewhere in the house and read from it every night. So we would do Psalms or Proverbs. Well, Tina was out of town the day I decided to, number one, sage the house for the first time and put a Bible out. And I came downstairs and put a Bible on one of the lamp tables in the living room. And I went to bed. The next morning I woke up, that Bible was gone. Tina was out of town. It was just me. I think I called her that morning and said, "Hey, I just put a Bible on the table before I went to bed, and it's missing." That Bible returned or stayed missing for about a year and a half. It did return once again around March of April of 2014, because when the activity threw the armoire across the hall and woke us up, and the loud banging resumed, the light fixtures in the hall exploded that same morning. So we did get a paranormal team to come in that Sunday after all this activity had happened, because it was just total chaos. I mean, if you ever wake up and think that your house is under attack, think of, a tornado passing by. And that's what it was like. It was like a twister was passing by, except for us, a twister was inside the house. So we must have Googled about 20 names and found a paranormal team that could be Johnny on the spot and come right now. So they came and they spent about 11 hours with us and conducted their investigation, and the house sort of settled down. But we went to bed as soon as they left. We were exhausted. And then about 1:30 something that morning or that night, the fire alarm goes off. And it's one of those fire alarms that if it goes off in one room, it's going to trigger every alarm in the house.
Right.
The fire alarm in the hallway went off. Our door was closed based on the activity we had the night before. We slept with the door closed. But when I opened the door, because now we have a fire alarm, and we were in such a panic, it's pitch black. I opened the double door of our bedroom, and there on the floor in the hallway, right in front of the door, is a book, and it's on fire. I mean, there are flames. And I look at it, and out of this knee-jerk reaction, I use my foot to close it, and in closing it, I douse the fire. And when I closed it, I looked and remembered that's the Bible that I put on the table a year and a half ago. And it's smothering. It's got ash and smoke and whatnot. Tina's right behind me, and I pick it up, and I realize when I picked it up, once again, yeah, that's the Bible. I feel a bulge in it. And I'm like, oh, there's something in it. And there was nothing in the Bible when I put it on the lamp stand table a year and a half ago. So now there's something in it. And I reopened the book, ash and soot went everywhere. And there in the middle of the Bible is a burnt, scorched wooden cross. This is the wooden cross I had bought 2 weeks ago. And I bought this wooden cross off Amazon. It's from Jerusalem, and it's from a tree off near the River of Jordan. I bought it off Amazon, and I hung it over our bed as a protection measure. And we saw this cross every day. It's about an inch tall, maybe 2 inches tall, and it was over our beds. Well, not anymore. Now it's in this Bible, and it's scorched and burnt like the pages of the Bible. And I looked at Tina, and I'm like, this was over our heads when we went to bed, okay? You cannot miss this cross above our heads. I would have noticed immediately had that cross been missing before I laid my head down. So It took the cross above our heads while we were sleeping, put it in the Bible. I don't know the chronological order, but and brought the Bible back, which was missing for a year and a half. And that was the first Bible that caught fire. After that, the other two Bibles, there would be a Bible burnt for the next 2 weeks thereafter, because in calling the church and calling the paranormal team who had just left that night, the thing was, okay, be firm. Obviously, you have something malevolent. And we was really trying to exploit the religious aspect of trying to throw light against darkness. So when that Bible got burnt and scorched, I took out another Bible and put that on my bookshelf. And then it would just start taking every Bible that we put out. They would go missing for either a series of a couple of hours, but they would always return in another part of the house, and they would be burnt when they returned.
Hmm. Now, do you think it was sort of mocking you with this, or do you think it was had an aversion to the Bibles?
I think it was both. I think it was letting me know that the Bibles have no effect on it. I think it was really mocking in the sense of, hey, you got Bibles to give, we got Bibles to burn. In a sense, like I said, the cross itself. When it started burning the Bibles and then started writing the 666 on the office wall, I pretty much believe it was mocking, because then it started drawing upside down crosses on the floor and drawing upside down crosses on the wall. And keep in mind, when we see this, there's two reactions that me and Tina always have. When you walk into a house after 8 hours of work day and you walk into a room and it's totally upside down, it's trashed. The thing that gets you the most out of the things being trashed is the writing on the walls. So you see an upside down cross and you see 666. And, you know, society wise, our reaction is, okay, this is horrible. This is demonic. This is frightening. We got to, you know, get 10 priests in here right now. So we're on the phones. Going back to look at it, I feel that those things from its point of view were done in a sense to get a rise out of us, or a panic, if you will, to where we overcompensated. Because when it would do those things, we would put on, we would come back with it with more religious objects times 10. We start bringing in the holy water. We start saging 4 times a day instead of 2. Instead of 1 Bible, we brought 2 Bibles. Instead of candles, we bought 5 candles. And the more we bought, the more it would react to everything that we brought in. It was really, I guess, a turn of the tide, if you will. And that took a year and a half for that tide to turn, but it still turned, is when we stopped being more reactionary. Because every time that we tried to react and maybe overcompensate, it would throw it back in our face.
One of the videos, you had sent me a few videos here, and one of them was a paranormal team trying to get it. It was one of the burnt Bibles, and they were trying to get it to actually turn pages, and it actually started doing it while they had the camera on it. The pages started moving.
Yeah, there's two things in addition to the pages moving about that video. That was Carissa Fleck and Nikki Novell. They both are paranormal investigators from the East Coast out of the Massachusetts, Connecticut area. And they had spent 2 to 3 weeks in the home. And this was one of the last nights of their visit. I had already gone to bed, and I think it was one of the ladies' thought experiments of, let's take one of the Bibles that caught fire and see if we can have a session over it. And yeah, you're right. It does appear to be that the pages are in fact moving as they are asking whoever's there, you know, hey, can you move the pages? And it does seem to coincide with the pages moving as they're asking for it to do so. What's also interesting about that video that we found maybe a few days later is you can actually hear the spirit talking to them. I put the timestamps there.
Yeah.
If you, for a person to wear headphones, you will actually hear the spirits talk back to Nikki and Carissa. And I don't know about memory, but they're saying something to the effect of, "We're trying to," or "Can you help us?" Or, "Yeah, we could turn some pages." And also, as you notice, as the video progresses, you hear the pops and pings and a subtle bang happening in different parts of the house. I tell people, because we live there and I know house noise and I know the noise that the spirits make. Every time there was either subtle or abrupt phenomena, the environment of the house would change. You would either hear walls popping or pinging or crackling. Sometimes the lights would go off and on before an object got thrown. Sometimes things, it would always be something in the atmosphere that you can sense, and then the phenomena itself would happen. So it seems the phenomena of the noises is coinciding with them turning the pages. Maybe they're using energy from the house. But yeah, the EVPs that they caught, the disembodied voices, in addition to that video, just adds more weight to, you know, this is not being, you know, this is not wind, it's not draft air, it's not a fan or whatever. But no, it's just very interesting.
Now, aside from the knee injury, how did this affect your work life?
I would probably just say there's two blessings out of this whole deal that kind of helped me and Tina get through this. One being my work, my place of employment. Seattle, I'm in IT, but the company that I work for, pretty much majority of companies in the Pacific Northwest that are IT related, they're very liberal with, like I said, time away or work from home, great health benefits. It was never a worry or stress of, hey, this is going to cost me my job, this is going to interfere with my living or my cost of living or anything like that. Because when I hurt my knee, yeah, I was laid up for 2 weeks, but I was able to take time off to heal without so much as a hiccup with my employer. Keep in mind, there have been times where I've been at work and my motion cams would go off. I would log in from work to my motion cams and see my house being attacked by these spirits. And I would just walk, you know, when I abruptly walk out of a meeting, but I would leave work to go home. But it was never, hey, this is, you know, affecting job performance, or, Keith, you're never here. Because I told my coworkers early on about my house situation, and boss and friends and people I work with, because some of them have been to the house and witnessed it themselves, they were just uber understanding. I mean, they thought it was crazy. They thought it was unbelievable. They would never live there. But you have to understand, when you're at work and all of a sudden your inbox fills up with 20 emails and each email says motion detected in a living room or bedroom, and then technology allows you to have the ability to remote in real time, and you look and you see your house not the way it was when you left maybe 20 minutes ago. There's been times where I've been at the red light and I get emails coming through my cell phone of the house motion detected. Me and Tina have sometimes got so many emails, we would log in. She would be at her job, I would be at my job, and log in together. And if anybody wants to hear those, because those are on my channel, you can hear the house being attacked. It was real time then when we recorded it, but when you listen to it on my channel, that's how we heard it the first time. We're hearing it. You're hearing large furniture movement in the hallway in the bedroom. And what's interesting about this phenomena is I have cameras in every room. The motion or sound cam is going off. The sound cam is going off in the hallway. Well, the sound is so loud, you should be able to hear this sound in the room next to it. I mean, that's just how sound works.
Right.
I would log in to the room next to the hallway with a different camera, total silence. Okay? Total silence. and they're the same camera, they're the same motion, they're the same sound detection. Then I would pivot back to the camera in the hallway and hear the noise. And I would have Tina listen. I'm like, do you hear the noise that I just heard? Because one of us has to listen to the hallway. One has to listen to the bedroom. And if I hear the hallway, I'm going to say, I heard it. And she's like, I'm listening. And I said, did you hear that? And it's loud. This is not something like a subtle tap. This is loud. It's triggering the sound alarm. And she's like, I don't hear nothing. And then we would switch. And that was, that's the thing that was so nuts about it, is sound, noise, bangs. It was just, I mean, it blew Steve and Don's mind while they were here. I mean, they got a good gist of it the 2 weeks that they stayed here, and they were dumbfounded. I mean, it was just weird.
It's very weird that one's picking it up and one's not. Do you think maybe they weren't physical noises, that they were being impressed onto the camera somehow?
I think that yes and no. I think it's part of that, because we sometimes, me and Tina, we would be in the kitchen or the bedroom, and you hear a loud crash. Something, there's a loud crash in the room that you're in, okay? And the sound sounds like something hit a wall and shattered in 1,000 pieces, okay? So you jump out of bed and you're looking, what was that? And you look around the room, nothing whatsoever. And then 5 minutes, you come back. There on the floor in the corner of the room is a plate shattered in 1,000 pieces and a hole in the wall. And it's almost as if the phenomena happened before the sound, or the sound happened before the phenomena. And that would happen a lot, because we would have objects thrown in the home. Sometimes you'll see them thrown and they make a noise. Sometimes you hear a noise and you go chasing the noise down and you can't find that noise. And sometimes you go searching for the noise and come back or revisit that area later, and you found broken bottles, a broken vase, broken candles. And you're like, this is what I heard 5 or 10 minutes ago, but now the objects are here. So it sounds like there's a way to, I don't know, this, I mean, it sounds like you said, transporting noises on equipment, but also on the human ear, or, you know, it opens up a lot of can of worms of, because I've seen things go through walls. I've seen things teleport and asport, or whatever that terminology is. So it's a lot of different variables at play. And we're a witness to all this. And when you try to write it down, take notes and tell people, you just play it over and over of saying, no, I had a cologne bottle be thrown at me and it goes past my peripheral. But when I look around and look for it, I can't find it. Huh. Okay. I can't find it. Me and Tina must have tore a room up one day looking for that cologne bottle. And then 30 minutes later, there's the cologne bottle in the middle of the floor. The middle. It's like they throw it, they let it hit whatever it is hit, it hits, and they take it back. They're able to take it back on a dime and then reintroduce it once you give up your search. It's like, okay, well, now let's reintroduce. And this is going to, you're going to like this, because this kind of lends itself to that concept. Because one day I was going to the mailbox, you know, our neighborhood is where the mailbox is half a block away. So I was walking to my mailbox and I picked up the mail, and I'm going back into the house, going upstairs, and I leave Tina's mail on the kitchen table. I take mail meant for me to my office. So I walk all the way up to the office and I sit my mail on my keyboard. Okay. And this is a two-story house, so I'm upstairs. I sit my mail on my keyboard, turn back around, and I must have been thirsty because I was going back downstairs for a cup of water or something. When I walked out of my room, I'm now walking through the hallway, I get to the staircase. The mail that I just put on my keyboard, about 5 envelopes, are sitting on the stairway. They beat me. They took my mail, okay, and beat me, because I didn't make no stops. I didn't stop to the room. I didn't stop to the bathroom. It must have been less than 5 seconds between my office till I got to that staircase, maybe 3 seconds. And I got to the stairway, and my envelopes were sitting there. And I'm looking puzzled, and I pick them up. I'm like, wait a minute. And you know, you're going to have to do that rationale thing. Well, I picked the letters up, turned right back around, and went back to my office. I'm like, please tell me my envelopes are still there. Please tell me they're still sitting on the keyboard. Let me just walk in there. I don't know what I'm holding in my hand, but please. And then my other brain is telling me, please don't let these envelopes disappear in my hand by the time I walk into my office. Please. I don't know which one I want to experience. I don't know which one. I walk into my office. Those envelopes are not on the keyboard. Not on the keyboard. So they took it and beat me to the stairway and sat it there. That's what I can't figure. There's an appreciation, if you will, of trying to understand how do they do that. Okay, if they kept it on those terms, I could live with them for the rest of my life. It's when they take it to that level of, oh no, we're going to throw a chair and watch a chair materialize or whatever. That itself is unsettling. But the aspect of how did that whole thing transpire, and that happened a lot. I mean, it just happened a lot.
What it almost seems like with the sound stuff, like reality's out of sync. Like you're watching the video, but the audio is behind, or vice versa.
Yeah, it's almost like a what is that? You got two tapes side by side, and one's ahead of the other one by, you know, a fraction of a second or a few minutes. You're showing the same movie, but one movie is ahead of the other.
Yeah.
And it seemed they're able to switch lanes. You know, I'm not a physicist or astrophysicist, but some of the theories I've read about, especially when I started experiencing this stuff, is there seems to be a way from a time dimensional point of, you know, you have multi dimensions that we all live in. There are many dimensions that we can't see that happen all around us. Some fade in, some fade out. Whatever these things are, they're able to, you know, jump in between them at will. You know, if you go by the quantum theory the equation talked about by Stephen Hawking, God knows a lot of other physics, is there's a thousands or a billion yous and me's, okay, just out there. We'll never see them, but there's a thousand or billion of you and me specifically. And it's so infinite amount of you and me's out there that each scenario has the possibility of being real in its own universe. But if those scenarios crisscross, then that's where the weirdness thing happened. It seems like these things, for whatever reason, and I don't know, I'm not even close to knowing, they are able to exploit that, or they live in it or take advantage of it. Because like I said, when we see, I mean, we had a paranormal team at our house, and a stepladder appeared between all of us. The stepladder was in the kitchen, and we all migrated to the master bedroom they wanted to conduct an EMF in the bedroom. So we followed them. And as we're all talking in the bedroom, you know, you blink your eye, and nothing is in the middle of all of you. We're kind of standing in a circle and having a conversation. And within a second, there's a stepladder in the middle of all of us. And everybody noticed the stepladder in between everybody at the same time, because everybody remember the stepladder was downstairs. And nobody has come into the room. We all came into the room together. But now we have a stepladder in between all of us. And it happened within an eye blink. There was never it's just instantly.
All right. Well, let's stop part one right there, because there's still a bunch of stuff we have to talk about. Why don't you tell people where people can find your videos and anything else you have online?
Yeah, so if you want to look at some of the videos that I just mentioned, I have a YouTube channel, and this is where I think I started this probably in late 2012, 2013, of all the videos that I would just capture while living in the home. So I have a YouTube channel. Just Google Keith space L or Keith.Linder. I'll send you the URL in the email, and then they can get it that way. But also on Facebook, Washington State Poltergeist Case. That's where all the updates are related to the Steve and Dawn investigation, all the evidence related to the Nikki and Carissa investigation. It's all kept up there on the Facebook page. So those updates are pretty much, I pretty much put something up there when things present themselves. But for video, for review, some videos are 3 minutes long, some videos are 10 minutes long. Some are hours, some are 8 hours long.
Wow.
The individual could take it upon themselves to review which video. I don't edit my videos. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to be a subject matter expert in the Adobe Pro and all these things. So they're pretty much outside of the narrative of what you're looking at. How you're viewing it on YouTube is how it's stored on my hard drive at home. I don't. And that's why some of the videos are 8 hours or whatnot, because some of the phenomena, what really impressed Steve when, you know, he took this case last year was he listened to one of the videos, and I think it was 6 hours long. Well, the phenomena doesn't happen until about 4 hours in the video.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people who are just going to edit down to the phenomena, because I want listeners to sort of experience it how we experience it. I want you to find it unexpected. I don't put the time stamp on when the bang is going to happen, because when we heard the bang, we didn't know when it was going to happen. I don't want you, because when you hit play and then the bang happens within 20 seconds, that's not really, to me, educating the listener on our experience. Because when you're multitasking, and you should multitask if you're going to watch an 8-hour video, but and maybe watch it in parts and spurts, but when that bang happens, you're probably going to be multitasking. You're probably going to be sending an email or getting a refill of coffee, and that bang is going to happen. And that's going to sort of paint the picture for a listener or viewer as to how we heard it and how we experienced it. Because some of those videos, we're asleep. Some of them, I'm asleep. Some of them, the house is empty. Some of it, we're in the room or not in the room or in the next room over. Sometimes we're just monitoring remotely. Sometimes the paranormal team is monitoring it from half a country away. Nikki and Carissa monitored my house for a year via remote before they even came on site. So, yeah, channels have a lot for anybody to pick and review and look at.
All right. And as I said, if you're a Patreon, you'll get part two right away. Otherwise, I will be putting part two up next week. If you want to become a Patreon, go to wheredidtheroadgo.com. There's a link right there on the page. Only $3 a month gets you extra content and multi-part interviews all at once. So, all right. To take you out, here's Psyche Corporation and Nightmares.
Shut the closet door. It's under the floor. The monster's there. The day I was born, you promised me hellfire. You were so sure I grew up waiting for demons to find me. I grew up hungry for ghosts to define me. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. Suffering, offering doom, 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 doom. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me,
chill me, slick me, thrill me. I don't want the unicorn. I want the bloodsucker. Modify the uniform. Cause I'm a monster. Sick of waiting for your curses to catch up to me. Burn me, chill me, slake me, thrill me. This is a sound I've heard before. It's like a voice asking for more. Ma chère éclate à cause des ailes. Home grown zigzag to primavera. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. Now amnesia, give me an Armageddon. Give me the daring to forfeit ordinary dreams for the cost of pleasing humans far too steep. Give me the nightmares, cause death doesn't scare me. I want the vampires and I want the glory. No ammunition. Give me an Armageddon. Shut the clouds.